Empire Lines uncovers the unexpected, often two-way, flows of empires through art. Interdisciplinary thinkers use individual artworks as artifacts of imperial exchange, revealing the how and why of the monolith empire.
In this episode, curators Roz Carter and Sophie Crowe Christensen chart Pierre Arca's photo activism across the Arctic region, from a pinhole view to wider perspectives on Indigenous and Inuit experiences in the 20th century.
I'm Roz Carter, head of programme at John Hansard Gallery. Here in Southampton, we're showing an exhibition by Pierre Arca called Silences and Stories, which I've curated.
And I'm Sophie Krohl Christensen. I'm associate curator at KW in Berlin, and I am curating a show by Pierre Arca this summer called Arctic Hysteria.
Pierre Arca was a Kalaallit and Danish visual and performance artist and photo activist. Her work references modern Danish colonial rule, which started in the 1720s. Greenland was granted some independence in the 1950s. It wasn't until the 1970s and a major referendum that facilitated home rule. Still today, though, Greenland is dependent on grants from Denmark, and in return, the country controls its economic and foreign policy. Pia mentions that her pictorial work deals almost exclusively, though, with the silence that surrounds those bonds between Greenland and Denmark, historic and contemporary, that she herself was born into. Who was Pia?
She was born in Kalaallit Nunaat, which is Greenland. Her father was a telegrapher and her mother was a seamstress. So as a child, she moved around a lot because of her father's work. So they actually, as a family, lived in lots of different locations around the coast of Greenland. As is the case with lots of young people in Greenland, to do their education, to undertake a degree, for example, they had to go to Denmark to do it. So she basically trained as an artist in Copenhagen and then stayed there, but obviously travelled back to Greenland a lot.
In the background, we can hear the constant click of the Kodak projector, and we're looking at the moment at a series of black and white photographs. I was really interested to read that she self-described as a mongrel, in part reference to the plural aspects of her heritage, but also perhaps photography itself sometimes considered as a mongrel to painting, a more conventional form. Can you tell me about how she first started practicing in this medium?
She did a lot of painting and drawing, which actually she did carry on throughout her career, but she did then move into photography during her degree. So I think she was kind of part of that whole move in the 80s and 90s for photography to become much more on an equal footing with other mediums. Perhaps she related to photography in that sense that it always felt like the underdog, maybe, kind of slightly in between kind of medium that wasn't totally acknowledged properly.
Not only just photography as such, but it's also the way she approached photography. So it was not just taking pictures of the scenery in Greenland or in Denmark, she was also performative about it. So she made her own camera obscura, sort of the classic camera, really. But she made a life-size version of it. It was a shed, basically, and it was made to her body dimensions. And she would go into it in Narsaq, in Kalaallit Nunaat. It was actually planned for her to travel with it to all these different locations where she had been staying as a child. But then she would be inside the box and take these images of the scenery, of this panorama. She would take them back with her to a studio in Copenhagen, and she would then stand in front of it naked in different postures. And then she would sort of make an image of the image with herself in it and sort of appropriates this, the landscape.
And although the original camera obscura doesn't exist, here in Southampton you have recreated this in an installation which looks out through the glass onto the city. As Sophie mentioned, this is an instrument that she constructed herself in Denmark for predominant use in Greenland. I know that she also placed the obscura in one instance where her home used to be, offering these small windows of light onto what has become a destructed building. Can you talk a bit about recreation and reconstruction and how that feeds into her practice too?
So we were very keen to try and remake it in the gallery space that people can physically go into and actually kind of get that bodily sense of what it was like to be in there, because it's such a physical experience for her in terms of making her work. I think it makes a big difference to understanding her process and actually understanding the images. There wasn't a massive amount of information, so we gleaned what we could. There were one or two original elements remaining, which Soren, her son, still had. So we have incorporated those. When she made it in 1990, she did an inauguration event for it, at which she gave this really beautiful speech about how important the apparatus, is how she described it, was in terms of her being able to be in it and to carry it around as a little home. She kind of described it as like the camera house. So we've got that speech up on the wall so that everyone can kind of read that. Her as a kind of person describing why she wanted to make this. And then over following years, she did travel it around Denmark. So there are other locations documented within the exhibition.
Something that comes across very strongly in these works is that sense of in-betweenness. She herself understood colonialism as a personal, a lived experience. And here, with these long exposure photographs, she's almost like a ghostly apparition, neither in one place nor another. It's something that we've spoken about on another episode of Empire Lines with Hélène Amazou, looking at her travel and seeking refuge in Belgium from Togo. Her best-known works here are some of the nude self-portraits from the 90s, where she's looking at how indigenous Inuit women are stripped by the colonial gaze again and again. It goes beyond a double meaning, really, of photography as exposure of bodies and of a society more widely. Sophie, could you talk a bit about the relationship between Greenland and Denmark and that ongoing culture of silence?
The relationship between Greenland and Denmark hasn't really been discussed widely in the Danish discourse, at least. I'm from the north of the country in Denmark, which still is the trade harbour. When I went to school, we never had any lesson about the history of Greenland or the relationship with Greenland. And I think it is changing today, but a lot of work to be done. So I can only attest to this silence that is sort of enveloping the relationships between the two. You mentioned that they gained sort of semi-independence in the 50s, which then again, per UN definitions, brought decolonialism to the country, which of course was not really the case. There was a lot of colonial measures still in place.
That was a period that triggered great social upheavals. Subsequently, many people suffered poor mental health, alcoholism, and there was great spread of illness as well across the area. It makes me think a lot about recent discussions around indigenous rights in the US. How have institutions and how have understandings changed in response to other global solidarity movements now, for instance, like Black Lives Matter?
One of the motivation for both Russ and I to sort of bring Bjarke's work out internationally is actually this. It's because it's interesting to see how her work will find resonance internationally. It's only been exhibited in the Nordic countries, so a lot in Denmark and Sweden, and I think we both saw a potential for the work to sort of be presented to countries like the UK and also Germany, where there's also a lot of decolonial debates happening.
Yeah, I felt it was important for that very basic level, at least. To kind of bring in that story of the Arctic. And of course it extends into Canada and all manner of different places around the north. So this is just one of many stories that are running in parallel.
With respect to both global and local representations, it does feel like this show is coming at quite an interesting time. At the same time, there's an exhibition of Outi Pieski, a Finnish artist at Tate St. Ives. Michelle Williams-Gamaker, a good friend of the podcast, has a film called The Silver Wave, which people can go and see at RAM in Exeter. And also in London, Shuvanai Ashuna has an exhibition at the Perimeter Gallery. Pia herself was not alone, and in the curation you've reflected or alluded to this by showing some contemporary filmmakers.
Yes, as you say, Pia was an incredible artist, and you know that's fundamentally why Sophie and I are interested, because the work's amazing. There were other people, but there just weren't many. There are still people investigating all of those histories and the situation now kind of in the wake of that colonialism and how the current situation is ever-changing. It's a very evolving political kind of landscape. So, of course, artists in Greenland are absolutely engaging with what's going on now. There's a piece by Julia Eyl-Harnberg, and she had a solo exhibition at Nuuk Art Museum when I was there. She has made a film within the last couple of years called My First Coin. It's a short film, but it's a very direct comment. Her reflecting as a child how she was brought up in Greenland, but, you know, the coins that she had the Danish queen on them, and being in one place, but actually the day-to-day things she was encountering and using reflected in a different place. So, yeah, so that's one of the films that we're showing.
Pia's brother as well wrote his dissertation on the representation of Inuits in popular film. And avid film watchers can see something like Godland, which came out in 2022, which looks at relationships between Denmark and Iceland, again through the lens of photography. Nivi Christensen, who is director of the Nuuk Art Museum and often uncomfortably termed Greenland's first art historian, says that when you Google Maps the Nordics, Greenland often disappears. It's a point that highlights how inclusion, indeed identity, is still often defined by Denmark. You mentioned earlier that Pia's family often moved, and at a time she lived actually near a US Army base before going to Copenhagen to Denmark to study at the Royal Danish Academy of Fine Arts. What was her experience of art education like in the city?
With the book, we had the pleasure to talk to Mette Sandby, who's a professor of photography and was Arke's, friend or colleague at least at the time, and she has given us an insight. There was a lab driven by a Danish photographer called Peter Bak Jensen, and Arke sort of joined that group, but then also challenged this very romantic or naive way of photography of landscapes.
Certainly. In some of the texts from the past, she speaks of this pressure to paint seals or create tools, these stereotypical images of what it is to be a Greenlandic artist. And indeed, she was often excluded from the sort of conventional categories of conceptual art. There's quite a sarcastic series around the corner. One of the works is titled Put Your Kamik on Your Head So That Everyone Can See Where You Come From. And there's also another, Toying with National Costume. Can you tell me about some of the props and tools that Arke uses?
It's all sort of a commentary on ethnographic photography. There's several series. So in The Three Graces, it's a bigger series. We can also see it from where we're sitting. And you see Arke, you see Susanne Mortensen, her good friend from her childhood, and her cousin, standing, looking at the camera in front of the panorama of the Narsaq icebergs. And they each hold an ethnographic object, culled by Arctic explorers and from different places in Greenland. They sort of have taken them out of the ethnographic display from the Danish National Museum. And in a sense, then, of course, both mimic ethnographic photography, sort of where the Kalaallit Inuit were placed with these objects as a sort of a representation of their culture, but then also of the lack that is in that representation. In one of the images, which is a very decisive image, they turn their back to the viewer, which is, of course, also a refusal. She would also perform in front of motifs and in front of images she had done in Kalaallit Nunaat.
Christensen speaks a lot of her own personal lived experience of language-segregated education. She talks in founding the museum about how there is no Greenlandic word for abstract or figurative art, and they struggled over whether to call it a museum or a gallery or an exhibition space, finding that exact definition. Roz, you mentioned earlier that most Greenlandic artists, curators, historians studied art in Denmark, specifically actually in the city of Copenhagen, including Arke and her brother. It's obviously so important that these works are not just engaged with through the lens of geopolitical interest or historical interest, but by art historians. And I wonder, what would a Greenlandic art history look like? How would we talk about it?
We cannot tell this story, but we are so thankful to have been able to talk to Nivi in this interview, which is in the book. To both, well, be in this sort of fundamental time in history where you are actually writing history. And I think they're approaching it in a very interesting way where you sort of abandon Western tradition and try to find your own language. And reflecting and looking back, how do you want to create history? How do you want to be represented?
The artist unfortunately died incredibly young, in her 40s, of cancer. And there was a risk, really, of her falling into posthumous obscurity were it not for a Danish feminist curatorial collective, Kuratorisk Action, which organised 3 retrospectives of her work in 2010 alone. Since then, there's been a major exhibition at the Louisiana Museum of Modern Art, and indeed these 2 exhibitions will be the first surveys of her work outside the Nordic and the Arctic region. What is her status across that area now?
The retrospective from Louisiana, which toured in Denmark between Louisiana and Kunstmuseum Brands and Kunsten in Aalborg, put her on the map, and I know that they've also worked hard on bringing her work into collections. There was a lot of work in collections already, but there was definitely also working on getting the work acquired also internationally, which I think succeeded.
Yeah, that there's much more of a shift towards the major national museums showing art that has come from that kind of Greenlandic context. So like SNK, for example, have just done a big show by Jesse Kleeman, and you know, she's the same generation, I think, that Arca would have been now. She's been making work for a long time, but this is the first time she's had like a big national museum exhibition within Denmark.
And indeed, there was a fascinating exhibition at the National Gallery of Denmark in 2022 by an artist called Haig Young, who was looking at the connection of 2 artists in the permanent collection there, both Pia and Sonja Furlov Mankoba, an artist who engaged with these ideas around African masks in particular, who we've spoken about in another episode of Empire Lines at the Cobra Museum of Modern Art. What is it about places like Southampton and Berlin, the distance that they provide, that enables us to look at Pia's work and practice, perhaps with new or different perspectives?
In the UK, there's very little awareness of these kind of colonial histories further north, and even anything to do with Greenland itself as a country. So I've been having lots of, you know, conversations where you talk to somebody and they kind of go, oh, do you mean Iceland? At a very basic level, it was about saying, actually, there's all of this stuff that has been going on, actually not that far away from us. Southampton can feel a million miles away, potentially, from that whole conversation. But of course, we are involved in those histories. When you talk about kind of Arctic expeditions, exploration, you know, the UK was in there, in amongst it. And I think that's a story that is not always picked up on. Scoresby Sund, for example, which is where she was born, goes by its Greenlandic name. It was named after William Scoresby, who was a whaler who was from the UK. So actually, our imprint is there. Also, as a gallery, we have a kind of history within our own programme of highlighting and trying to kind of bring to the fore people who have not had that exposure, that maybe haven't been shown in this country. Doing this show by Pia Arca is kind of part of that history of the gallery's activity in terms of highlighting artists, quite often female artists who have not had the representation that they merit or deserve. And of course, yeah, as Sophie was saying earlier, you know, everything that Arca did back in the 90s, early 2000s, it could have been done yesterday. You know, it absolutely resonates with all of the conversations going on. And conversations that are yet to come, you know, it will continue to have relevance for a long time.
Thank you both ever so much for taking the time to talk to me today.
It's been a pleasure, absolute pleasure.
Thanks so much. It was great.
Pia Arca Silences and Stories runs at the John Hansard Gallery in Southampton until the 11th of May 2024. The partner exhibition, Arctic Hysteria, runs at KW Institute for Contemporary Art in Berlin from the 6th of July 2024. A new publication, co-published by John Hansard Gallery and KW Institute, will be available in late April 2024. A symposium will also take place in each city. You'll find all the links in the episode notes. Empire Lines is produced by Yelena Sofronievich. For more episodes, subscribe wherever you get your podcasts.